My name is Zeke Simpringham. I work for the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, or IFRC for short. I am the advisor on migration and displacement issues for the Asia-Pacific region. I work here in Kuala Lumpur, in Malaysia. We have our regional office on Jalan Ampang, hence my journey being slightly shorter than Dr. Slim's today. And I think a good starting point is to recognize, before we delve into Rakhine deeper and Cox's Bazar as well, that globally for the IFRC, we have taken a decision and increasingly recognized that migration and displacement and the humanitarian consequences are creating some of the gravest and most challenging humanitarian issues we are seeing around the world. This has led to global, regional, and national level commitments and a reinforcement of our capacity to support national societies to address some of these humanitarian consequences. My role is covering Asia-Pacific. I focus on 38 countries, which sounds nonsensical, but that's my role. Of those 38 countries, Bangladesh and Myanmar are obviously priority countries for this theme for us. I think as a starting point, for those of you who are not so familiar with the IFRC, we are the global network of Red Cross and Red Crescent national societies. We are in 191 countries in the world, with something like 17 million active volunteers. Our role as the secretariat for this network of Red Cross and Red Crescent societies is to support national societies based on their inherent strengths, wherever they are. National societies are always local actors. They are embedded in the communities that they serve through their network of committed volunteers. And critically, national societies are present at all times. They're there before disasters and crisis, during disasters and crisis, and they remain there afterwards. This is maybe now focusing a bit more on Myanmar, particularly the case in Myanmar, where the Myanmar Red Cross Society, referred to by Dr. Slim, is the oldest and largest humanitarian organization in the country. Myanmar Red Cross Society, or MRCS, was first formed in 1920. It has a network of 45,000 volunteers across the country and is active in 330 branches. MRCS, as many, if not all, national societies, has a unique auxiliary status to the government of Myanmar in the humanitarian field. This status is most recently enshrined in a 2015 Myanmar Red Cross law, which also preserves and protects the status of the national society as a neutral, independent, impartial humanitarian organization. As IFRC, our support to Myanmar Red Cross Society has been ongoing since the 1990s, when we first established an office in the country to support Myanmar Red Cross Society in their role in responding to the repatriation of people from Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, to Rakhine State. As mentioned by Dr. Slim, Rakhine is a complex, evolving, and challenging humanitarian context for displaced communities, for host communities, and for the humanitarian actors who are there to support them. Rakhine State has been beset by layers of displacement and return over the last decades. We had large-scale displacement in the 1970s, 200,000 people fleeing to Cox's Bazar. In the 1990s, 250,000 people fleeing to Cox's Bazar. 2012, with large numbers of internally displaced people and 128,000 people remaining in IDP camps in Rakhine State. In 2015, we saw the Andaman Sea crisis, which reached the shores of Malaysia, and then the events of August 2017, which should be well known, I am sure, to everyone in the room, but which has created a humanitarian crisis in Cox's Bazar and in Rakhine State. The scale and speed and challenge and complexity we have not witnessed in this region for decades. We were present in Cox's Bazar prior to 2017. We have a long-standing partnership with Bangladesh Red Crescent Society and the UNHCR, providing support to the small number of registered refugees in the camps at that time. As you may recall, before the events of August 2017, there was also large-scale displacement the year before, in October 2016. We scaled up our support to Bangladesh Red Crescent Society, and then the events of August 2017 happened. As you may recall, the speed of the displacement was the fastest we have seen since the Rwandan genocide in the 1990s. The scale is almost unthinkable. There are now almost 1 million people in camps in Cox's Bazar today. Many of those people, if not all of them, fled on foot, carrying what they could physically carry. Their children, their grandparents, a solar panel, belongings, documents. And they came to nothing. They came to a region of Bangladesh that is extremely impoverished, extremely prone to disasters, and was mostly forest reserve land. There were some small formal refugee camps and informal settlements hosting up to about 100,000 people, but nothing like the infrastructure needed to support nearly 1 million people. In those early days, our collective humanitarian focus was on saving lives. We had one road to reach all of those people. There is now a second road being built. And it sounds a little bit jargony, but on stabilizing the humanitarian environment, making sure that people can get fresh water, that they have shelter and they're not sleeping in the open, that acute medical injuries and wounds can be treated, that psychosocial support and mental health issues can be taken care of. I think collectively it has been well mentioned that the humanitarian response has been incredible in Cox's Bazar. And it's almost incredible that we have not seen mass loss of life in that environment, in that humanitarian environment, and not mass disease outbreak or health concerns for people really coming with little to nothing. We were then beset by the monsoon and cyclone seasons and had to rapidly scale up preparedness for those. In congested camps in Cox's Bazar, it's almost impossible to conceive of proper disaster risk reduction. It's about disaster preparedness at best. Luckily, last year, the cyclone season was not as strong as it can be in Bangladesh. We then moved to discussions, as you will be familiar, about relocation to an island in the Bay of Bengal, and moves by both governments to formalize an arrangement for repatriation of some, if not all, of the displaced people. We then had an opportunity, I think finally, to pause for breath. And then now, the monsoon season starts again. We have done collectively, with all of the humanitarian partners in Cox's Bazar, incredible work to prepare for the monsoon. But this is an extremely congested condition that these people are living in. And many, many concerns remain. Maybe I can make a couple of comments about Rakhine State as well, and then I think we should really leave it open to discussion as much as we can. I think in Rakhine State, it's also important to note that beyond the immediate needs of those newly displaced, those in prolonged displacement and the host communities, we cannot forget that communities in Rakhine State are also vulnerable to the impacts of natural hazards. Particularly the cyclone and monsoon season that we are witnessing across Myanmar and including in Rakhine State right now, between April and November every year. Exposure to these natural hazards also adds a layer of fragility and risk to an otherwise fragile humanitarian context. Already in the past 5 days, 6 days alone, you may have seen in the news, we have seen significant humanitarian impacts from the heavy monsoon rain across Myanmar and including in Rakhine State. MRCS, with our support and the support of ICRC, has played a role across Myanmar in evacuating people from flooded areas, providing emergency relief and support, and assisting even in early recovery with shelter repair kits. A second point and penultimate point is that we also need to remember, as Dr. Slim mentioned, that Rakhine is not only beset by displacement linked to violence and vulnerable to the impacts of natural hazards, but it's also one of the least developed regions in Myanmar, with a poverty rate nearly twice the national average, and with communities suffering from poor social services and livelihood opportunities. And in that context, as the IFRC, we support Myanmar Red Cross Society to be there not only in times of emergency relief, but permanently through their network of 17 branches across Rakhine State. And through those branches, we have a number of initiatives on longer-term development and resilience, ranging from community-based health, maternal newborn health care, and also non-communicable diseases. I think a final point, if you will. Beyond this rapid emergency response, beyond this permanent presence and resilience building in communities, we also have a role in what we would call humanitarian diplomacy or advocacy, which is reminding authorities of their responsibilities to act always in the interests of vulnerable people and with full respect for humanitarian principles. And a recent example of this is the government of Myanmar has recently launched an initiative to develop a national strategy on camp closure. As the Red Cross movement, we were invited to provide inputs into that strategy, which we did. We welcomed the step of the government to take a positive approach to durable solutions for internally displaced people, not only in Rakhine State, but across Myanmar and Kachin and Northern Shan and Kayin. And we were pleased to see that many of our recommendations and inputs were incorporated into an updated draft of that national strategy. And we now look forward to implement, first of all, endorsement of that national strategy, and then implementation in line with our humanitarian principles. I think I will leave it there. Thank you very much.
So we have until 4:30 for Q&A, so just over 45 minutes. We really need to finish at 4:30 because Dr. Slim has a flight to catch, so we don't want him to get stuck in traffic on our account and all that. When you ask your question, please identify yourself, who you are, where you're from, and make it very swift, because we don't need a third speaker for this. We already have two. I'll start with the Q&A by asking Dr. Slim. When you do not, I understand that you do not wish to get enmeshed in the politics of it, and it's absolutely. I mean, I would. Wouldn't want to get lose access out of because of that, and you have to respect confidentiality and so on and so forth. But what do you see yourself as having any role in terms of accountability for actions taken by any side of the conflict? Whether you have to, you ought to say that this ought not have happened, and you will need to publicize it, instead of just letting it happen. Do you see a role in that? I mean, there's a tough balance to achieve, isn't it? I mean,
You're absolutely right, Sharman. And I mean, the answer, and many of you who know ICRC will know the answer already, is that we engage very clearly in our confidential dialogues, our legal dialogues, and our protection dialogues with all parties to conflict. And we gather evidence, and we fact find, and we present them with what we find, and with our legal interpretation of violations, etc. So we do challenge. Do we have a role in accountability? I mean, the answer is no. We are nothing to do with prosecutions. We are nothing to do with the International Criminal Court. As those of you know, we have always guaranteed ourselves immunity from giving witness or giving information to the International Criminal Court. It's in the Rome Statute that ICRC cannot be called as a witness. And this is extraordinarily important to us to be able to do what we do as a humanitarian organization. At the same time, there's no doubt for us that one of our big concerns always is that the Geneva Conventions and other forms of human rights should be respected. So that is the line we take very clearly with all relevant authorities, government and non-state authorities. And that's the way we do it. So we don't tend to call for prosecutions or accountabilities. We also work with governments to make sure that their own domestic legislation and their own criminal courts can and will hold people accountable to IHL and to war crimes. So that's how we do it, and it's the way we do it.